This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And on the line with us, we just had an hour with Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls. And a lot of interesting stuff, particularly around impeachment and the Democratic primaries. And we can continue to digest some of the things that Congressman Pocan said throughout this hour and the next. But right now on the line with us is our old buddy Greg Palast, the investigative journalist, author, filmmaker. His most recent work, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, GregPalast.com, P-A-L-A-S-T.com is the website. You can tweet him at Greg_Palast. Greg, welcome back.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
So, Greg, over the last couple of years here on this program, as a fairly regular, in fact, I think you're probably our most regular contributor, you've been educating us about the yeoman's work that that Kris Kobach has been doing to make sure that black people can't vote, young people can't vote, old people can't vote, Hispanic people can't vote, Asian people can't vote.
You've got a problem with that, right?
Yeah, I do. And okay. that's pretty breathtaking. But now it turns out that he's got his little pinkies involved in the census. Do I have this right?
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, I had to jump Kris Kobach to talk to him the first time because he's always hiding from me. I had to pretend to be a local reporter, you know, kind of cheap disguises and the whole bit. But then he started calling me, trying to win me over. He's no fool, Harvard, Yale, Oxford graduate, and he told me that he was the one who put that little idea in Wilbur Ross's head. That's our Secretary of Commerce, our doddering 80-something Secretary of Commerce billionaire, that you ought to ask about your citizenship status of those in your home on the census. And so Ross sent it down to his experts, who said, oh, you know, if you ask that question, according to our calculations, this is Ross's own census expert says, we will lose 6.5 million Americans from the census, mostly Hispanics. And Kobach said, yeah. And so that's what just went to the Supreme Court yesterday. It looked like the right-wing majority of the Supremes are going to endorse putting the census question about your citizenship on the census. Now, I know we've talked about the privacy of the census. That's something under something called U.S. Code Title 13. You go to the census website, they'll tell you all about that. What they won't tell you about is the memorandum to Eric Holder from the Justice Department saying, well, there's also Patriot Act Section 215, which says that the census information can be used for investigating non-U.S. persons. In other words,
whoa,
if you put down aliens, legal or otherwise, now legal may be a U.S. person if they have a green card, but if you are suspected of being a non-U.S. person, the census information can be used. That's from a 2000.
Robo Ross just turns the census information over to ICE, and boom, they start dragging people out of their houses.
I think it goes beyond ICE. I mean, in fact, Kobach has been straight up front about why he wants the question on the census. In fact, they used it at the court, and it kind of passed over a lot of people's heads. They said we need this question to enforce the Voting Rights Act and the National Voter Registration Act. Now, wait a minute. How does that census question help you enforce the Voting Rights Act? The answer is that these laws require that the voter rolls be accurate. And from Kobach's view, that means removing the 2 million aliens that he said are registered to vote in America.
Well, from the time he said that until today, there have been, 96 or 93, I guess it was, federal prosecutors throughout the Bush administration who were looking into this. There have been millions and millions of dollars spent by state after state after state looking for, quote, illegal aliens on their voting rolls. And to the best of my knowledge, they haven't found more than about 10 of them in the last 10 years.
Yeah, not about four, I'd say. But you're talking about facts, Tom. You got to get this. We're post-fact now,
right?
Okay? This is about fear. Okay, that's what they're selling us, fear, that there's aliens on the voter rolls.
Right.
And according to Kobach, they actually, 1 million voted for Hillary Clinton. That was his
right
statement.
And Trump says it was 3 million. No, I've got that now. Now, the argument, Greg, that most kind of the wonky Democratic argument, Democratic Party argument, against putting this question on the census is that Say you've got a town, and Westminster, Wyoming, right? So we'll just make up a town, and this town has a population that's like 30%, quote, illegal aliens, people who are undocumented workers. And again, it's unlikely that there's any town that's that high, but let's just say it is. The census, if it knows, let's say the town has 100,000 people and 30,000 of them are not citizens.
Right.
If those 30,000 people don't answer the census question and say, yes, I live in this town, the federal support for that town's schools is going to drop by 30%. The federal support for that town's roads is going to drop by 30%. The federal support for that town's fire department and everything else is going to drop by 30%. The availability of food stamps and all this stuff is just going to go away. And not just that town, it's going to impact that county, it's going to impact that state. And that's just not right. I mean, that's basically been the Democrats' argument up to this point. Are you taking way beyond that?
Yes. Well, let me mention another fictional town, Los Angeles, where I am. We're going to lose a congressman. It's that simple. Six states, New York, Illinois, California, Florida. The six states that will lose a congressman are all, except for Florida, Democratic solid. So they know what they're doing. Okay? They know what they're doing. And they'll also lose money from the federal government. And it's not just illegal aliens. And by the way, when Jefferson put in the census and when Hamilton put in the census, the founding fathers, they want to know every person in the United States, not who's a citizen, not who's not. They want to know who's there. And a lot of that was to apportion both costs for the Revolutionary War and benefits and power. And it was about people. It wasn't about citizenship status, which is a new thing anyway. Yeah. But you're talking facts. This guy's talking about slicing up the voter rolls. And this is very important because there is this exception. If they think you're a non-U.S. person, they can use your census information. The other thing is called re-identification, something brought up in the amicus to the court by the Electronic Privacy Information Center, EPIC, which says, look, if you have census information, even if it's generalized, you can use other information to identify particular people. Your privacy is shot to hell with this type of game. It's not bad if it's all about if it's what is your sex or income or something like that on the long form. The question is, we know this will knock people out. And I want to point out something else, Tom. You already have a massive undercount of Hispanics, already a massive undercount in the census of black people, especially young African Americans and urban dwellers who don't get those census forms in the mail or don't fill them out or have other reasons why they decide not to fill them out. It's very much like the postcards. Remember, we talked about the postcards removing people from the voter rolls under cross-check.
Right, the whole Cajun thing, yeah.
Yeah, so they know who's not returning the postcards. I got the information on the radical difference. Like, if you're young and black and urban, there's a 500% difference between your returning a census card. This is I got from the census, then a white suburban homeowner who's older. There's a 500% difference. So we're already massively undercounting the minority population. California, New York, Illinois are already losing, have already lost members of Congress and funds because of the current really horrific ancient system of using mail and knocking door to door. They don't knock door to door in many urban areas. Let me tell you, that's more mythic. Suburban areas get covered. So we already have a massive undercount. This expands it. And by the way, the Justice Department and Homeland Security did use census information to track Arab Americans during the Bush administration after the Patriot Act was passed. And guess who came up with that system of tracking Arab Americans using census and other data?
Are you going to say Kris Kobach again?
Oh, you always know the answer, Tom.
Oh my God,
Kris Kobach. So in other words, my God. This thing it's already been used for ethnic targeting. It's already been used to attack the voter rolls, and this is what they're really aiming at. When they said we're using this to protect the Voting Rights Act, that is the most dangerous phrase.
I get that. So, Greg, we're running out of time here. This is before the Supreme Court right now. I think they heard arguments on this yesterday, didn't they?
Yes. So they'll have and basically, except for Kavanaugh on one question by Roberts, the right wing stayed silent, and everyone reads that as they're going to let the Commerce Department put this question on, the Kobach question on. It was also endorsed by Steve Bannon. There's your protector of civil liberties.
Yeah.
And by June 30, we should get the decision of the court, but it looks really bad.
At this point, is there anything any of us can do?
Yeah. Number one, if you get the census form, answer it. Just like when I tell people register to vote,
right,
fill out that census form.
Well, I get, you know, encouraging, you know, African Americans, for example, to fill out the census form. But if the Trump administration is going to use the census to go after people, I can't in good conscience encourage people who are here without legal status to do so. Which is really a terrible thing to say on the air, but I mean, how else do you deal with that simple reality?
Well, I think the reality is that we have to answer those forms, and you know, we have to fight them on the beaches and in the census forms and in the voting booth.
Yeah.
You know, there's no other way to do it. Fill out the form.
Yeah, amazing.
Fill out the form. And by the way, if you don't answer one question on the form, you don't go to prison.
So you can ignore the "Are you a citizen?" question.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
All of us can ignore that question. In fact, if all the white people in America were to ignore that question, it might blow the whole damn thing up for Kobach, right?
I think we started a movement, Tom.
There you go. Greg Palast, gregpalast.com. Thank you, Greg.
You're welcome.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your calls and more of the news of the day right after this. Stick around. And welcome back, Ken in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind today?
Sir, Tom, how are you, sir?
I'm well.
Good. The gentleman that's on came on after I had already got on the phone to get a conversation with Pocum. But I do want to let you know something. Just the facts with me might help me understand how it's going to affect people that are either incarcerated or have served the sentences and are now going to be released or have gotten their separation papers from prison, and then now they want to be back into society, which is great. I believe in rehabilitation, what so forth. But what my question is, to the gist, is I'm from the islands, but I'm from a U.S. territory. And Guam, is people from Guam, they don't have the right to vote in national election for president, what so forth. But we do have a local unicameral legislature, 21 seat with a couple senators, a congresswoman that serves Washington, D.C.
Right.
Okay, having said that, I fall into citizen. I am a citizen. And most people that are citizens, they claim their citizenship because they claim their citizenship.
Sure, and when you're in California, you can actually vote.
No, I understand that, but I'm going to the real generic aspect of I am a citizen since 58 from birth under the Organic Act of 1952, yada, yada, okay.
Right.
I'm saying if I want to vote this year, I'm going to vote, or next year, 2020, I'm going to vote, especially since we got Donald J. Trump in the office, and he's doing everything he's doing to do everything
I get all that, Ken. What's your question or what's your point?
My question is since I'm not an ex-con and I'm a standing individual, and I want to go ahead and say that I'm a citizen. But now you just brought up that non-citizen adage that I can go non-citizen, and then I can just answer every other question that I want.
Yeah, I mean, with regard to the census, I mean, you can just answer it any way you want. It's Pierre in Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Pierre, what's on your mind today?
First, Tom, a word of thanks for continuing to have Congressman Pocan on. I love how he does what he does, and I think, this forum and the way you guys run it should be a requirement for every representative. They should be, made to respond to us and
yeah, it's like Prime Minister's questions. But your point or question, Pierre, we just have a minute left.
Okay. To me, it all boils down to this. The Mueller report offers clear and credible evidence that the Trump campaign wanted, sought, and got, and maybe needed, but who cares, assistance from a foreign state in defeating Clinton. I don't think anyone serious would question that. What is still an open question, though, is whether this is still a nation and a people that is bothered by that sort of thing. as we always used to be. And right. I guess we'll see.
Okay. Yeah.
That's all I got.
I agree with you, Pierre. And I think you said it very well. This is the thing that hasn't broken through, it seems. And this is the thing that Donald Trump is most afraid of, right? When we heard that Kirstjen Nielsen couldn't bring up the possibility of Russians interfering in the 2020 election in front of Donald Trump because he doesn't like to hear about that because it questions the legitimacy of his presidency, that should tell you everything. He thinks he's an illegitimate president. He thinks he was put into office by the Russians. So, yeah, let's rub it in his face. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And boy, there's a lot in the news here. I just wanted to share a couple of things with you that I think are like really, really important stories. This is actually an older piece from the New York Times that somebody tweeted to me this morning. This is from last October, but it really is relevant right now. I have noticed, and I've talked about this a couple times on the air, all of these new Twitter accounts that are being opened, or Twitter accounts that were opened back, you know, a couple of years ago during the last election and then went quiet for 2 years. And so, you know, they now have, they're following, a 100 people or 1,000 people, but they've got like 30 tweets or something. Or excuse me, the other way around. They've got 1,000 or a couple thousand tweets and they've got 30 followers. And not all of these are actually robots. Many of them are computer bots, but many of them are actually people who are paid to do this. Typically not inside the United States. That was the Internet Research Bureau IRA, in Russia. But in Saudi Arabia, this is going on. This from Katie Benner, Mark Mazzetti, Ben Hubbard, and Mike Isaac, writing for the New York Times. The headline, Saudi's Image Makers, a Troll Army and a Twitter Insider. Hundreds of people work at a so-called troll farm in Riyadh to smother the voices of dissidents. And additionally, they have a Saudi employee at Twitter whom Western intelligence officials suspect is spying on users' accounts to help the Saudi leadership. Now, this was all put together by a guy named Saud El-Qantani. He was a top advisor to Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He was fired back when Khashoggi was killed, but he was the strategist behind this thing. They note in the article, many Saudis had hoped that Twitter would democratize discourse by giving everyday citizens a voice, but Saudi Arabia has instead become an illustration of how authoritarian governments can manipulate social media to silence or drown out critics while spreading their own version of reality. Before his death, Mr. Khashoggi was launching projects to combat the online abuse. They talk about in the article how every morning he'd wake up and just be hit with hundreds of attacks from Twitter bots or from Twitter, you know, these Twitter accounts coming out of Saudi Arabia at him. And many of them in Arabic. Before his death, he was launching a project to combat the online abuse and to try to reveal that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was mismanaging the country. They note that offices and homes in and around Riyadh, where hundreds of young men hunt on Twitter for voices and conversations to silence. This is the operation the Saudi government is running. Its directors routinely discuss ways to combat dissent, lists of people to threaten and insult, daily tweet quotas to fill, and pro-government messages to augment. This is happening in Saudi Arabia. The Chinese are doing this. By the way, the Chinese just yesterday sentenced a whole bunch of those pro-democracy Hong Kong protesters to prison. Not getting much coverage. It's continuing. And then Kirstjen Nielsen, before she was forced to resign, one of the big challenges that she had with Trump is that she was starting to get flipped out that Russians in other countries were going to hack our election next year. And the senior aides, Mick Mulvaney and others, said, no, you can't bring that up in Mr. Trump's presence because it upsets him, because he doesn't think that his presidency is legitimate because he thinks, or because people around him think, or because the American people think, that he was only pushed over the top with help from Russia. So he won't even allow a conversation about this. So we're just going to leave all the voting systems wide open. Russians, Chinese, please hack us. Saudis, go for it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
This is, in my opinion, something that qualifies as a national emergency. We should be having a conversation about this, too. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, in the next hour, by the way, we've got a geeky science that's going to just blow your mind. Charisse in Poulsbo, Washington. Hey, Charisse, what's on your mind today?
Hi. This is really more of a question for the congressman, but I just thought I'd throw it out there anyway. In the same way, I don't understand how big businesses don't lobby for universal health care to get that cost off their balance sheet. I don't understand why the banking industry, the housing industry, doesn't lobby for some sort of relief for student debt so that all those students out there, you know, adults out there with student debt can't get into the housing market.
Because most of the student loan debts are not, you know, they're not written, these loans, in fact, I don't think any of these loans are written actually by the federal government. They're subsidized, they're backstopped by the federal government, but they're written by banks. And the average interest rate on student loans is 6.5%. Yeah, you can't sell, right now, house mortgages are 4%, right?
Right.
You know, savings accounts are 2%.
Funded.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, okay. I thought they were more government funded.
No.
That's my mistake.
Yeah, they're private corporations, they're government backed.
Or
at least some of them are. Many of them are. I think the majority of them. But yeah, and that's why they're making a fortune. I mean, $1.5 trillion of student loan debt at 6% interest is a mind-boggling amount of money every year that these guys are making in interest with no risk. No risk. You can't declare bankruptcy on these things, you know. And if you walk away from them, they have the legal ability to go after your parents or after your children. Even if you die with student loan debt, they not only can go after your estate, but after your estate is exhausted, they can go after your children. So I mean, it's the gift that keeps on giving from the point of view of the bankers. And a lot of this is simply because of the Bankruptcy Act of 2005, the legislation that basically made it impossible, illegal for people with student loan debt to walk away from it through bankruptcy. And that's a law that needs to be changed. And it's a law that, you know, was promoted by a number of very high profile Democrats. And it was including at least one who debated me on this program about it. And, you know, saying, oh, this is, you know, young people need to learn responsibility. And I'm like, really? And that's where we're at. Charisse, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Tim in Naples, Maine. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
That's good. I was calling about the congressman, but I'm glad you mentioned about the student loan stuff, because what's going on is that Warren, you know, it brought me to think of Warren, and she, you know, she gets some gumption. She about the debts there, forgiving the debts.
Yep.
A little nervous. Sorry. And then also, let me go on. She also was adamant about, not adamant, but she was endorsing impeachment. Which what's her name? Pelosi was kind of lukewarm on it. I don't think we need that lukewarm approach. I think we got to go all in on this.
Yeah,
it's really necessary.
Well,
right?
The problem is defining the terms.
Let me finish my question. My question really was about he says subpoena, and when they say that and they don't do it, he says there's punishments like censure, and the other one was impeachment. And I'm kind of curious as to how is that really scary for these people? And are the Democrats going to go full throttle and do it? And additionally, are the Republicans going to be frightened by those threats of impeachment and censure?
If you're subpoenaed to appear before Congress and you refuse to take the subpoena, and this is apparently happening today with the Judiciary Committee, then you can be held in contempt of Congress. And contempt of Congress is a crime for which you can go to jail. That's the thing. That is where Congress has their leverage, and hopefully they will use it. I think that they should be rapidly moving to put some of these people in jail who are refusing to respond. Paul in Glenside, Pennsylvania. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to delve in to some more details about Medicare for All, some of which are beginning to be discussed in the business news sites, and that's what will happen to the for-profit health insurance companies, because as Bernie Sanders has pointed out, they're going to go the way of the dodo. They're not going to be here anymore.
So what happened to all those people who worked at the 1,000-plus, what's the name of the chain that you could rent a DVD at? Blockbuster, at the Blockbuster stores. Right. What happened to all those people who worked at those Blockbuster stores when Netflix came along?
I don't know.
They found other jobs, Paul.
I said maybe they're flipping burgers or something. Yeah. Well, here's the point that I'm trying to make. Aetna, which is one of the largest health insurance companies, no longer exists because it was bought by CVS. So people who are questioning, what happened to these people? Well, what happened to the people from Aetna? Aetna is no longer traded on the New York Stock Exchange. It was bought for $73 billion, and that all wrapped up by the end of last year.
Uh-huh.
I think if we talk about Medicare for All as having a big component as a merger and acquisition, and the shareholders will be compensated, and the people will move on.
You know,
people
the shareholders were not compensated when Netflix ate the lunch of Blockbuster. The shareholders were not compensated when the buggy whip manufacturers had their lunch eaten by the car manufacturers. This is evolution, Paul. This is just what happens. Things change. Medicare will be expanding, or Medicaid, however it happens, will be expanding radically. They'll have to hire lots and lots of people who know how to process claim forms. And a lot of those people right now are working for Aetna and for UnitedHealthcare and whatnot. And there will be job opportunities for them. But, you know, times change. We just have to accept that. George in Chicago. Hey, George, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Two points. I had hoped to raise this with the congressman, but when he said that anybody can get elected president, if Trump can get elected president, I thought, well, yeah, anybody can get elected if they got Kris Kobach and 50-state cross-check behind them.
And hundreds of millions of dollars in billionaire money being poured into the elections down ticket that cause your voters to turn out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Only this time, by the way, I think the biggest story that nobody's talking about, George, that I've seen this week is that 2 days ago there was a small report in the Washington Post that a group of billionaires who last time around, and I'm assuming this is the Koch network, although I don't recall specifically, but that a group of billionaires who last time around did not throw any money at Donald Trump this time are totally on board. He gave them their tax break. They want more tax breaks. He's giving them deregulation. They want more deregulation, you know, more poisoned air, more poisoned water, more poisoned planet, more profits for them. And so they are going all in. They're going to throw hundreds of millions of dollars behind Donald Trump in the 2020 election. This is going to be a big deal. But anyhow, back to you, George.
That absolutely proves the point that besides cross-check, that if you got Citizens United and McCutcheon and all that unlimited money behind you, and if you've got a Republican Party that has assiduously for 40 years pursued governorships, Secretary of State's offices, and legislatures for purposes of gerrymandering and eliminating all Democratic voters that they can get rid of, yeah, you too can be president. And if you've got, thousands and thousands of bots and human actors on the social media from democracies like Romania, Bulgaria, Russia, and
Saudi Arabia,
China, and Saudi Arabia, yeah, you too can get elected president. The other thing I'd like to point out, and I beg all my fellow Democrats to take this to heart. This is a lesson that we all should have learned long before 2016, and we learned it the hard way again in 2016. The longest lasting legacy of any presidency is the judges. And I'm a Bernie bro. I was all in for Bernie, but I was happy to vote for Hillary when she got the nomination. I would much rather have had Hillary nominating judges than Trump.
Yeah.
So everybody out there who still has a burr under your saddle about this, you've got to get over it.
Yeah, I agree. On both sides, people have to get over it. Peter Dow wrote an absolutely brilliant piece, I think it was yesterday or the day before. I think it was published in The Nation, about how he had been a Hillary person, you know, a Hillary partisan in the last election, and basically hated Bernie. And what he's looking at right now is that Bernie is the front runner in the Democratic Party, or at least one of two, and he may well be our candidate. And we need to get over that, right? You argue for your favorite candidate. But at the end of the day, you know, being sabotaged by people who are still PO'd that Bernie had the temerity to challenge Hillary 2 years ago, or 4 years ago, is crazy. It's just crazy. George, thank you. Dave in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. Listen, I was 59 when Obama got elected, and it was all hopeful and everything, and now I'm 70. And it seems like they've taken the Republican Party, tried to take him down. But anyway, I tell my grandchildren, and I told my children, anyone could be president. And am I going to have to change that to say, well, only if you're honest and if you show your tax returns? You know, there's going to be a disclaimer when I say anyone could be president now, because look at what we've got now.
Yeah.
With no accountability.
Well, and there's a disclaimer just on the concept of the presidency now, because, you know, we've got a guy who lost by 3 million votes. The 80,000 votes that made him president spread over four states may well not even be actual votes. They might have been hacked votes. And, you know, and they may only exist as a consequence of voter suppression in those states. And I mean, you know, and to the extent that some people may have gone out and voted for Trump because they thought that, yeah, the Pope actually endorsed him and they're good Catholics. That was one of the things that was pushed out by the Internet Research Agency, the Russian troll farm. It was this meme that the Pope had endorsed Trump. I mean, it's like he is an illegitimate president. We just need to acknowledge that, recognize that,
yeah,
and point it out. And by the way, if the tables were turned, if Hillary Clinton had got elected the same way, the Republicans would be talking about it every single day. They would refuse to use the word president when they describe her. I mean, you know, et cetera. Yeah. So, Dave,
right,
thank you. Spot on. We'll be back. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We're going to check in about 4 minutes with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world. So stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're also at the top of the next hour going to have Dr. Trita Parsi with us, who's going to be talking about the situation, a possible war with Iran. Really? And welcome back, Ernie in Pleasant Hill, Missouri. Hey, Ernie, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Oh, thank you. I was trying to catch Greg Palast on the voting, on Ivanka Trump getting the voting machine patents from China.
Mm-hmm.
And if them are going to be made by the same company that makes phones that were spying on our troops and stuff.
Yeah, that would be Huawei, the company that's building the 5G backbone and network for most of the world, too, and probably here in the United States. Ernie, the patent that Ivanka Trump got for voting machines from China, made in China, to the best of my knowledge, she doesn't have any plans to go into the voting machine business. I think that she or at least her business managers were simply applying for patents in all kinds of categories just to see what would come through. And of course, the Chinese were more than happy to give her all kinds of, you know, opportunities and options. She can now sell those. You know, if for example, Diebold wants to start making their voting machines in China where it's cheaper to make them than in here, they may go to Ivanka now and say, Ivanka, here's $10 million for that patent that you paid $35 for, you know, when the Chinese registered it for you, or $200 or whatever it cost her. And so, you know, it's just another profit opportunity for Ivanka, in my opinion. I think that's what's going on, Ernie. David in Lee, Massachusetts. Hey, David, thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's on your mind today?
I just wanted to mention something that was in the Mueller report and seems to tie in with a theme today, which is the kind of the warfare between Hillary and Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
Because the social media amplification of a lot of that, also the Russians and the other actors were targeting those groups as well.
I'm sorry, say that again?
The social media that was amplifying...
Right, what group was targeted by the Russians?
The Bernie, like...
Oh,
the
yeah,
Bernie
they were promoting Bernie. Well, actually, I think mostly they were promoting not so much we love Bernie as we hate Hillary.
Exactly, but it was also... That was in a small portion of the Mueller report itself, in the counterintelligence part of it.
Mm. Yeah, I have not yet had the time or the opportunity to literally read every word in the Mueller report. I've read a good chunk of it. And in fact, I've been thinking that a regular segment on this show for the next couple of weeks might be, you know, Tom reads from the Mueller report. I think it might be fascinating. In fact, maybe we could do that instead of book reports for a little while. There is apparently a lot of stuff there. And, well, not just apparently. I mean, there's a lot that I was seeing, you know, just when I was going through it last week when the thing got dropped. And it hasn't even been a whole week yet since the Mueller report was released. It'll be a week tomorrow, if my memory is correct. And I do not want to see this thing slide into the memory hole. But David, you're right. I mean, there are high crimes and misdemeanors all over that thing, and they need to get more publicity. David, thanks for the call, and thanks for watching us. I do appreciate it. Ellen Ratner's up next with Talk Media News. Stick around. We'll be hearing what's going on in the world in just a moment. Stick around. Welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Loving What You Do, a new book out by Ellen Ratner. On the line with us is Ellen herself. Hey, Ellen, what's going on in the world today?
Well, I'll tell you, you were just talking about high crimes and misdemeanors. The president today said he would challenge any impeachment in the Supreme Court. He said there were no crimes by me at all, including high crimes and misdemeanors.
He saying that he thinks that if the Senate votes to remove him from office, he can challenge that to the Supreme Court?
I think he thinks he can challenge the impeachment in the House first in the Supreme Court, and then, of course, the Senate. But I think he is not playing around, and he thinks he can challenge anything in the Supreme Court. And, of course, he's packed the Supreme Court with his buddies.
Right. And you got Clarence Thomas's wife was working for the Heritage Foundation. You've got, Alito made enemies with Obama. I mean, plus, you know, obviously Gorsuch, whose mother destroyed the EPA for Ronald Reagan and Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh, what do we even have to say about him?
Yeah, it's bizarre. Whew.
Okay, well, the Hispanic Democrats want a path to citizenship by the Dreamers. Now, I have to tell you, I was in the room on a Saturday morning on 2010 when, in fact, the Democrats voted against the Dreamers. And so I'm not very happy about that. But Hispanics now are saying they have a path to citizenship. They want a path to citizenship for the Dreamers. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens on that front.
There would be no way that would get through the Senate right now, would it?
Oh, gosh, no, absolutely not. I mean, you know, there's no bipartisanship. There's nothing that's going to get through the Senate.
No, in fact, Mitch McConnell, day before yesterday, he said, I will be the Grim Reaper if I'm the Senate Majority Leader next, you know, in 2021. He literally said, I will be the Grim Reaper. Not a single piece of legislation is going to make it, you know, of Democratic legislation is going to make it through the Senate.
I mean, what do you say to that? You don't say anything, right?
Well, what he was saying was, hey, Koch brothers, make sure that the six or seven Republican senators who might be in danger get hundreds of millions of dollars from you guys, you know, and all kinds of support. Helicopter the money in because we've got to hold the Senate. That's what he's saying.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, he's pushing for money for sure.
They're
going to
do it.
About that.
They're going to do
it. Well, we'll see. Let's hope not. Okay. The Trump opposition has to deal with Congress. He considers Congress partisan. He doesn't now want Don McGahn to testify, but he can't claim executive privilege, according to people I've talked to, because he allowed them to testify before the Mueller committee.
That's correct.
So I don't understand how he's now saying, oh, I'm not going to allow any of my aides to testify, former or current.
He's employing a strategy, Ellen, that he used when he was in business. He would build a casino, for example, and hire somebody to build all the roulette tables. And they submit a bill to him for $10 million. And he doesn't have $10 million. He can't afford to pay it. So he tells them, sue me. So they sue him. So he then countersues them for frivolous lawsuit. Now you got two suits going through the courts. He drags it out for 2 or 3 years, and then the casino goes down, he declares bankruptcy, and everybody's screwed. He has been doing this sue and delay strategy literally his entire career. And he his strategy here is that if he can push all these things to the Supreme Court can delay them until after the election.
Well, that's probably what they would do on a 5-4 vote, because, of course, they have their meetings every week they're in session, and they decide what cases they're going to
That's correct. Yeah, I think that there's a very good chance that he's going to succeed in getting a lot of this stuff delayed until after the election. And that's going to be, this is the knife edge, right? This is going to be the thing that is going to define the next year, is to the extent to which the Supreme Court is willing to participate in Donald Trump's, you know, sue and delay schemes.
Well, I think that he's got the votes right now. That's unfortunate.
I hope not. I hope that John Roberts breaks
with
these
guys. Roberts is going back and forth, thank God.
I know. He's equally concerned with his beloved Republican Party. I mean, you know, he did the work for George W. Bush in 2000 that helped win Bush v. Gore. He helped write that brief that they submitted to the Supreme Court because he used to clerk for Rehnquist. He's torn between his beloved Republican Party and the institution of the Supreme Court now that the court has his name. This, you know, 100 years from now, they'll be talking about when the Roberts Court. That's
exactly
right. And that has changed, that has recalibrated his thinking. But the question is, did it recalibrate it enough? We'll see.
We will see. All right, the CDC, that's the Center for Disease Control, which is actually run by somebody that I used to be on the board of I'm still on the board, but he's no longer in Maryland. But the CDC has now declared 626 cases of measles across the United States in at least 22 states.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing.
And, yeah, it's crazy.
Yep. How are they, by the way, it was patient zero. Apparently the measles epidemic in the United States started with a Hasidic guy from Israel who came to the United States.
Who didn't take the vaccine.
Right, and he was patient zero. And I understand in the Hasidic community there's a lot of people who are unvaccinated. And that's a measurable chunk of Israel's population.
Well, it's very interesting.
What's going on with measles in Israel?
Today in the New York Times, a Hasidic guy said we ought to pay attention to science and we ought to vaccinate our children.
Yeah, well, I think that that's going to happen. But I was just wondering how is apparently neither one of us know, you know, whether this is spreading through the Orthodox community in Israel or not.
I don't know, actually. Yeah. I don't pay attention to Israel. I only pay attention to the good old United States.
Okay. So what else is up?
Okay. Now, I happen to be on the board of Reporters Without Borders, but we have just made United States 48th on the World Freedom Press ranking, mainly because of the kinds of things that Donald Trump and other people are saying about the press.
Yeah,
it's really quite unbelievable. And this weekend is the White House press event, and usually we know that Donald Trump isn't going to come, but usually he lets his staff come, but he's not even letting his staff come.
Is that the Correspondents' Dinner? Is that this weekend?
The Correspondents' Dinner, that's right.
Whoa. I remember you invited, you know, we were your guests
at the
one where Barack Obama just, you know,
that's
peeled
right.
the skin off Donald Trump.
I know.
It was amazing. Ellen Ratner, my friend. Ellen, thank you so much for dropping by today. Great having you with us. We'll be back and talkmedianews.com, of course. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.